Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
All right, the Reds, hope you're all doing all right. This is The Weekender with me, Gareth Roberts, Amelia Bonner, Kev Walsh and at Amelia. We are celebrating the return of club football after that international bollocks. Could not be doing with any of that. And it's obviously resulted in a big, massive injury list for Liverpool, which I'm sure you've heard about. So we are going to talk about that. We have then got Andy with Johnny Owen, who is the director of Three Kings, a new film about Shankly, Busby and Jock Steen. In part three, we've got John with Jim Yeoman from the charity Cycling Project, which is a new scheme, which is helping Knowsley and the Whittle, called Wheels into Employment. So you'll be able to find out about that. And then it'll be back to us, back to this crew, talking very specifically about Liverpool v Leicester City on Sunday, 7:15 p.m. on Sky. So starting off sort of where we are right now kind of thing. This match is third v first. The Reds are only a point off the top of the table. But it does seem in the wider world now that we are getting some believers turning into doubters with this lengthening injury list. The bookies are among them. The Reds are now marginally down to second favourites to win the Premier League, with City restored back to being favourites. And there was some data out this week compiled by Premier Injuries, which revealed that Jurgen Klopp's side have picked up 15 injuries lasting 10 days or more this season, with only Man City suffering more, 16. Ours, though, it's fair to say, have included some very vital players. So just going to run through them first, Kev. This might take some time. But you'll be allowed to comment at the end, mate. So there are 11 first-team squad players currently in various stages of likely availability. So Van Dijk, we know, ACL, out long-term. Joe Gomez, knee, out long-term. Trent, his calf injury, the report that he will be back next month. So therefore, you know, not likely to be available at the weekend. Reece Williams, a minor hip injury, left out of England under-21s game. Andy Robbo, there was a hamstring strain worry last weekend. He was withdrawn for the game with Slovakia on Sunday, but he did play 90 minutes against Israel on Wednesday. Jordan Henderson, tightness in leg stroke groin, depending on which report you read. He was sent home after coming off at half-time in the Belgium v England game on Sunday. That's been reported as precautionary. It's also been reported that Liverpool are hopefully will recover. But the Times, Joycey today in the Times, with his big Grim Reaper outfit, saying he's unlikely to play against Leicester, so we shall see. I mean, we'll get an update, of course, when Jurgen does a press conference, so listening to the team talk and you'll get all the latest injury news. Mo Salah, as well, tested twice positive for COVID. He's remained in Egypt. He could miss Leicester, Atalanta and Brighton. Fabinho, hamstring, missed last three games. Reports that Liverpool hopeful he can play. Thiago, some yard dog went through him against Everton, and there are no photos of him training yet at the new Swish Boss training base, so we're still none the wiser on him. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain out with his knee, no return date, not in training. And Nico Williams is the latest one. He missed Wales' match midweek with Finland after a kick to the foot. So there you go, Kev. 11 players there that may not be available for Liverpool at the weekend. So how are you feeling in yourself right now about the mighty Reds?
I'm feeling kind of upbeat because I didn't hear the words you said then. When you said Premier Injuries, I just kept thinking about Lenny Henry doing funny adverts for them. he did do a Premier In advert, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
So Premier Injuries, if you want to get Lenny Henry sorted, just pay me some sort of dividend for that or the organisation of that advert, I'm fine with that. Injury-wise, I don't know. I listened to the overview and I'm a bit with Carl on the fact that I just think we're still. It'll be funny when we win it with all these people out. And I look at Leicester and I know the top of the league and they're a good team and they could easily turn Liverpool over, but I just don't think they will. They've had some mad results them this season. Obviously, they absolutely tonked Man City, didn't they? But they've lost to other teams. So you look at all the players we've got out and you think, fucking, that's a lot of good players who are not playing that. But then by the same token, if you look at the players that are still left, you go, tell you what, mate, I'd fancy them against most teams in this league. Now, the main ones we need to worry about, obviously, are what are we going to do in defence? But it's sort of been taken out of our hands. There's no sort of, you can't bring in new players until January. So we've got what we've got. And I think Klopp has had 2 weeks to just think, okay, well, is who's likely to play? And I think Nico Williams, he's got a kick on the foot, but you'd imagine he'd be fit enough to start. So here's what we've got, and here's what their strengths are. So that's what we're going to do there. And then what you've got to do is be tactical further up the pitch. And I think that suits Klopp. I think it probably plays against what Brendan Rodgers would want, because he'd want to know Liverpool are going to do what they normally do. Whereas I think now you're probably going to be looking at it thinking, we've got to win a midfield battle, or we've got to win a front three battle. And listen, you can bitch and moan all you want about injuries, and you can let it be a proper downer for you, but it is what it is. You're going to get injuries in a season like this. You better get used to it, because everyone's going to get piled up injuries. We've unfortunately been absolutely tonked with them at the moment. But I'm still confident that we've got a decent enough squad, and that the other teams in the league are not great, but they're in no way ahead of Liverpool. So Leicester's probably as difficult a challenge as you could have with the injuries that we've got, but I'm still confident that we'll get a result against them.
Yeah, this is the thing, isn't it? Am I on? I'm on.
Yeah, you're on again.
I was muted myself. I was about to tell all you to mute yourselves when you weren't talking, and then I've tripped myself up. But we're all doing our best with the audio, soz. It's lockdown Liverpool, isn't it? But yeah, what I was going to say, Amelia, was there are plenty of, you can either focus on all of those injuries, which I know I initially did, but I felt I had to with a list like that. But what you can also do is start to look at the players that we do have available and the players that can still cause any team a problem. And I think as well, it's worth saying that apart from the obvious players that can cause a team problem, there's plenty of sort of peripheral players that can come in that haven't got as many minutes as some of the players that are out. So, you know, you've got Matip coming in, fingers crossed, you know, he's been wrapped in bubble wrap all this time and he's absolutely fine for the weekend. You got Phillips kicking around, who did well against West Ham, so let's give him benefit of the doubt. Curtis Jones, Milner, Keita, Shaqiri, even Origi. I didn't want to mention him to Kev because I knew he wouldn't want to have a chat about Origi there. But nevertheless, you know, you've got players there who haven't got loads and loads and loads and loads of minutes in the legs who can potentially come in and do as a job the next few weeks while some of these injuries recover.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when you list the injuries and when you list the calibre of player that is injured, I feel like I keep veering wildly between going, oh God, we're doomed. It's crisis point. We're absolutely doomed. And then kind of going to the other side of going, even with all those players injured, we will still field 8 or 9 players that are better than our opponent's very best players in every single game, because the players that you've listed there are still brilliant, and that you get to treat the likes of Shaqiri almost like a new signing, even though he's been knocking around for quite a while. We get to go, well, let's have a look at, let's let him have a go more than he would have ever been able to this season. I prefer not to talk about Divock Origi because I'd quite like him to not have that much of a go, but I think it's obvious that teams like Leicester, and with Leicester being the biggest challenge that we're going to have in the next kind of window of games, teams like Leicester will go, I imagine, for some of the younger players that you've named there, because I think you'll look at younger lads that are in positions that, like, you'd normally have someone like Van Dijk in, and you'd go, well, let's try there, let's have a go. And I think as much as it's whether they're up to it kind of like physically and if they're able to do it, it's also mentally knowing that they're going to be targets and they're going to be the players on the pitch where Jamie Vardy, for example, is going to be looking at them and going, well, I'm coming for you, and kind of being able to, I don't know, they have proven that they're able to do it. So it's just knowing that even with all these injuries and with nothing coming to kind of save them, and with it being an important Premier League game, it's not like a cup no one gives a fuck about, that it's just backing themselves, I guess, and us backing them and not flapping and not getting super nervous. Not that they can hear us because we're not in the ground, but I feel like they can feel us.
Yeah, there is a thing with that, isn't there, Adam? I'm a bit like that in that, you know, despite that big list, and I compiled that this afternoon, and I was like, you know, and I sent it on to some of my mates, and they were like, shit, I hate internationals and all this, and, you know, having a big rant. And I was sort of like, I'm all right with it, because I just kind of think the mentality, the culture at the club, you know, people who have stepped in to shoes at different times, it's just good, isn't it? And the squad is much deeper than it has been in the past as well, so I sort of like, you know, I looked at the odds for this game as well, and you know, the tide, they're not, Liverpool aren't as much as favourites as they are normally when they're at home, but they are nevertheless still favourites. And, you know, they're against the league leaders, Liverpool third, only a point behind. But, you know, despite the sort of, you know, the big, oh my God, have you seen Liverpool's injury list? I think when you sort of look, you know, you take a deep breath and look at the squad and the team he could likely put out at the weekend, which we'll come on to later on. You know, we've still got more than a chance of winning the game, haven't we?
We have, and it's interesting because I think there's always a bit of mayhem and fret around international breaks, even when they kind of don't result in a couple of injuries. And it's really difficult, I think, when there's a long time between games, especially if it's an international week, but to kind of keep your mentality strong as a fan. And it's there does always seem to be ups and downs to kind of go through. And I know we're not, it's not us that's the mentality monsters, is it? It's the team. And so it's fine in a way. But, you know, it does go a little bit mad when, you know, there's people kicking off about sort of not having an instant and constant update about somebody like a Thiago. I'd like to know, you know, where he is. But I accept the fact that the club might be thinking, let's just keep that one quiet, build up his fitness, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, short of a Klopp press conference every day, which, by the way, I would like. I would like him to do some sort of, like, wartime 5 p.m. radio broadcast every day to the nation. But short of that, you do end up with these, as Amelia said, your ups and downs, and I think that's kind of natural in between with these long breaks. But when you were talking then, it sort of occurred to me about where the whole mentality monsters cliche started, and it was because we had a very similar injury list, you know, massively important players, and the 3-0 deficit coming up to the second leg against Barcelona, when, you know, everybody had written us off, but the players hadn't. You know, I had. I just thought I'll have 4 pints and go and hopefully have a nice time and get out of the house. But the players were the ones that were never thinking like that. They were thinking, yeah, they were looking around the dressing room thinking, yeah, I'm still here, he's still here. And the international break, in a sense, has been really positive for some. You know, Andy Robertson is the main one, but Gini Wijnaldum has nearly scored as many goals for Holland as Marco van Basten. I think he's 2 behind Marco van Basten now. But yeah, so there's my main point is one of positivity, because I do think that despite the fact that I am sort of half having to talk myself into this, because there is a world where everything that happens does become too much and our season does sort of start to look a little bit like it's in tatters, but we're not there, and I think that there's plenty of evidence to say that we still have far too much for most teams in this league, and get through this one, get through the next one, and the players start to come back, and then you start to see that momentum, and without thinking too far ahead, you can see a world where where everybody is buoyant, much more buoyant, very shortly.
And Kev, you know, we've got to bear in mind as well that there are some, so, you know, there's some pretty machine-like players that we've got in the squad. You know, Gini gets a shout there from Adam, and he's played more minutes than anyone, I think, for club and country in recent games. And yet, you imagine he'd be absolutely fine for the weekend. As Adam says, he's decided that he's just going to slot absolutely loads of goals for Holland. He's scored 13 now, the same number Harry Kane has for England in the same amount of games, which is phenomenal. And so, you know, you sort of look forward to seeing him back because you think he'll be buoyant, you think he'll be flying. Other good news as well, we haven't got David Coote as the video assistant referee, because everyone basically kicked off and, you know, they've gone, for operational reasons, he will no longer be the video assistant referee. It's like, you shit yourself there, didn't you? We've also got the small matter, Kev, of that, you know, if we remain unbeaten, you know, the other side of this Leicester game, we've set a new club record. So it was equaled last time. And if we're unbeaten in this game, it'll be 64 home league games unbeaten, which is absolutely phenomenal. And I know they always do that thing, we're not asked about records and all that bollocks. That's well got a shout this week when they've been training. If not, it's getting a shout in the home dressing room before they kick off at the weekend. You know, they'll want that record, won't they?
Yeah, of course. There's something like that. Klopp, as much as Klopp says, listen, we're not interested in records, and that's fine. Klopp will, we always say it, don't we? He wants to gain every single 1% advantage that he can. And so if at the moment he is looking around and people are a little bit downhearted, I don't necessarily think they are. I agree with what Adam said. Some people will be really buoyant, and the players, they'll look at players like Virgil van Dijk and go, he's fucking great, him, and I feel great when he's there. But by the same token, they won't look at him going, he's not there, and thinking, oh, we're fucked here. We're a one-man team. So I think when it comes to something like the record, Klopp will just say, listen, here's another thing for you to look at. Here's, all you've got to do is go out there and beat Leicester. Or in reality, not even just not get beat by Leicester, which is not going to be the attitude he's got. But then you've got a record at a club like Liverpool, which is likely never to be broken, which that puts you in a pantheon of legends with some of the greatest players ever to play the game. Now, that's not the main aim of the game on Sunday. The main aim of the game on Sunday is to cut Leicester down to size and to get ourselves back to being top of the league. And that's exactly what they'll be aiming for. But if he's got to give them a little bit of toffee about getting a record, there's no problem with him doing that. And the players who are going to come in, for the players that are injured or the players that are sick or whatever, for whatever reason that they're out, and not looking at it going, oh, I'm glad I'm just keeping Mo's spot warm here. Mo Salah's the best striker in the world at the moment. He's on absolute fire. But whoever comes in to replace him, even if that is Divi and he comes in and has a go, he's not coming in thinking, I'm just coming here to fill his chair for a couple of weeks. He'll be thinking, well, I'll just score a couple of goals, and before you know it, I'm the next Diogo Jota. I'm the one that's pushing in for the place. These are professional players, do you know what I mean? That might not be a realistic aim for Divi, but by the same token, he hasn't got to where he's got by now by taking people like me giving him shit and taking it to heart, as he just thinks, shut up, you fat knobhead, and watch what I do next. And long may that continue. I hope he proves me wrong, and I hope he gets the golden boot this season, do you know what I mean? If that's what it takes for us to win the league, I'm sound with that. And you said about mentality monsters before, that's what they all are. You've got the likes of Takumi Minamino still to come in, do you know what I mean? He hasn't hit the ground running exactly, but what you've seen of him in that sort of Bobby Firmino role, he looks fantastic to me. Shaqiri, what a player he's turning into for us. And I just keep looking back towards that 5-2 at Everton last season when I lost my mind before the match and was fucking nearly crying in Old Celtic, thinking, what's he doing? We're going to get beat by the Blue Shite. And then we tonked them 5-2 with a team that I'd never picked. So I think in the next few weeks, you're going to see a load of teams that you probably would never pick. But by the same token, if there's one thing they'll be, it'll be well drilled. They'll know exactly what fucking job they've got to do. And the players that are coming in are not bums. Listen, I've been saying for ages, and we've all been saying, we don't want to see a prolonged run of Divock Origi playing at number 9 or playing, especially playing off one of the wings and cutting inside. But then we didn't want to see him that night against Everton, and he's on all right there, and we haven't sold him for whatever reason, so he's still part of the squad, and there's loads of players that are going to be coming in like that. And by the time you get to February and March, I think you're going to be looking at players like that going, thank fuck, we've still got these numbers in the squad. Because the likes of Burnley by then, and even maybe teams like Leicester. Leicester's squad is getting better, but teams with lesser squads than us are going to get to that point, and it's going to be walking wounded. Mate, it'll be getting, listen, what's up with your hamstrings? Go on, patch it up, give them a shot or whatever, and get them on the pitch, because there's not going to be enough players for teams to do that. So if it gets to that point, I'm confident that our squad, even the lesser lights of it, are much better than the lesser lights of other squads. And that might be just what we've got to do this season. We won the league last year by being absolutely unbelievable. Be nice to win a league by dogging it, wouldn't it? Just to say, listen, we've got it all in our locker, and whatever it takes is what we'll get on and do.
Yeah, and if it ends up that they're all calling us spawny scouts bastards, then even fucking
all
better.
All the better.
Because all those years we watched the Manx spawn the way to loads of titles, it's about time we had one. Okay, well, as promised, you've now got Andy with Johnny Owen, director of Three Kings, a film about Shankly Busby and Jock Stein. And then you've got John with Jim Yeoman from the charity Cycling Projects. We'll be back with more chat about the Leicester game in a minute. Nice one.
I'm delighted to be joined over Zoom by Johnny Owen, author and now filmmaker. We've got him on to talk about your new baby, the Three Kings. It's in the run up to be released later this month, and a film that's close to our hearts, because one of the main characters of the piece is obviously the great Bill Shankly. And we just wanted to get you on to talk about, you know, how this came about, the book, the film, you know, the similarities between the other two. Obviously, it's about Matt Busby and Jock Stein, and just kind of like how it all came together, their shared history and their backgrounds, and how it all seemed to happen at a similar time within a couple of years of each other, and how much of an impact all three of them ultimately have over European football that still felt to this day?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, the film is called The Three Kings, The Makers of the Modern Game, and I don't think that's underplaying it at all. I think they changed football. And not just football, they changed cities. You know, Liverpool became a city that, you know, is world-renowned now for his football. Matt Busby, the same with Manchester. My father worked underground, Andy. He was an electrician. And like all men that worked underground, he would often point out the miners. So as a kid growing up, it was a bit of a thing for me and my brothers where he'd go, he's worked underground. And we'd like roll each other's eyes, you know, blah, blah, blah. But then as I got older, my dad passed away, bless him, 2 years ago. And I reminded him of this and he laughed and he said, well, you've remembered, haven't you? And then when he did die, I thought to myself, well, it's quite interesting for me. There's a generation of men and women there that are passing into history that, you know, I'd like to tell their story. And the way I thought I could do it was by telling the story of Shankly, Steen and Busby. There was a fantastic TV series made about nearly 30 years ago now by Hugh McIlvenny called The Football Men, which is about them three as well. But James Gary, so you know quite well, he's a big Liverpool fan. He's the producer of Senna and Amy, Oscar winner. He wanted to do something with me. And I pitched this idea of doing a real modern version of their story. And he went for it. And the film is out. Bless it. It was meant to come out in cinemas this week, but obviously we all know what's happened with the country being shut down. And I understand that because of health. So it's got a bit of a limited release this week, but then it'll be out on DVD for Christmas. And then it'll be out on Amazon, I believe, in the new year.
You talk about your dad there and him just that being able to spot a man at a mile away. Do you not think that's a little bit wilder? I always laugh. And I imagine you're the same because you're a Cardiff boy. We kind of share a similar... I wouldn't imagine, I mean, not to broad brush it, but the two places, and I always put Newcastle with this, they have similar sensibilities politically in Glasgow as well. When you go abroad, I can always spot someone from Liverpool a mile away before they've even opened their mouth. You know, just like the little nod in the wing, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, the way they walk and they're in a valley boy. I know somebody from the valleys. No, it's very interesting, actually. And these men had a very specific personality and character. And what's really interesting in the film, when Shankly goes to Liverpool, he's like, I knew I was in the right place and I was home, he calls it. I was with my people, he says. And that's literally what he sort of created, I think, in Liverpool, the difference between the three. I mean, Liverpool, he was like the messiah. It was like a cult, do you know what I mean? They followed him and they back him to the hilt. I still think that the club has got that character and DNA in it, you know, the cop, the way it is, the way Liverpool swarm over you when you're playing against them. And that's even like, 20, 30 years after Shankly left, you know, all those sort of very specific things in Liverpool's character, he was a big part of that. And I felt that that he had a relationship with the crowd that was, you know, I think Klopp's got something similar, interestingly enough now, but Shankly, when he said things like, I'm one of them and they're one of me, I've stood in the cop, you know, you can see he really meant it, you know. He valued that relationship with the fans in a way that is very difficult now almost for us to understand in the modern age.
Well, you mentioned that. I've actually got that written down as a question, because as much as you'd say, well, Shankly was a perfect fit for Liverpool, was Liverpool kind of the perfect fit for Shankly? Because in the run-up, Liverpool were in turmoil and never really found that natural fit. And he just seemed to be... It was fertile breeding ground for Bill Shankly, is what I'm saying. And you could say the same about... And I'll get into this in a minute, but you say the same about Busby and Jock as well, where had they gone to another club, they may not have been as successful because they didn't have that relationship with the fans and, you know, they didn't have the sense of building something like that, sense of community.
No, I totally agree. I mean, you're right. You know, we spoke of it just before we come on air, you know, about the fact that, you know, Busby was the captain of Liverpool, and there's a story that he was approached about being the manager, but they wouldn't let him pick the team. But when he went for the interview for Manchester United, he said, "You, I have to have total control." And he came up with this great line. He said, "I don't want to just manage a football team. I want to manage a football club," which is a great line. And then, you know, he invested in scouting and all that kind of stuff and off the pitch. And so there was a big thing. And he was great friends with Bill Shankly. They played together for the Scottish midfield. They were from very similar backgrounds, different characters. Bill was very fiery and passionate. And Matt was a bit like an older brother. That's how he described him, always calming him down. Come on now, Bill. And they spent a lot of time together. Bill's granddaughter was telling me that Matt was always on the phone and the same the other way around. Bill was often popping over to Manchester to see him. And then, of course, famously, when Liverpool was struggling in the second division, they were a mid-table provincial team going nowhere, really. The board asked Matt Busby for his advice because they still valued his opinion. because he was probably the most famous manager, certainly in Britain at that point. He'd had the Babes. But he said a great relationship with the Liverpool Football Club. And of course, he famously says, the boy you want is my mate over in Huddersfield. And Liverpool literally that day go over to Huddersfield. And there's a great story that I couldn't get it in the film. But when Busby puts the phone down, he turns to Jimmy Murphy, his famous assistant, and goes, I might regret that because we're going to have Bill on our ass now. Do you know what I mean? And it's so true. And I thought to myself, lesser men wouldn't have done that. They wouldn't have got somebody they know is going to be, you know, a terrific manager and a terrific rival. You know,
I wanted to ask you about this there, specifically because about the three men, because they're all born within a stone's throw of each other as a crow flies.
Yeah.
We all have the similar backgrounds, all work down their mind, but I think it's sometimes too easy to pigeonhole them
as
being very similar when the fact the three completely different personalities, and you look at it, and there's a common thread of all this, the European Cup, which Shankly doesn't win. You know, he goes to watch Celtic to win theirs. And
he does.
Well, I suppose what I'm trying to get, and you've researched this deeply, and I want to know your thoughts and feelings on it, when as different as they were, when you ground them down and chipped away, the core materials of all three of them are pretty much exactly the same.
I totally agree. There's a brilliant book by a guy called Malcolm Gladwell called The Outriders. And he explains how very rarely, if ever, do things happen by chance. He talks about the Beatles, for argument's sake. You know, there was a time in Liverpool where you could go to Hamburg to play and you do your 10,000 hours and all that kind of stuff. It's fascinating. So he describes it. He says Bill Gates had access to one of the only terminals in America in the late 60s, and therefore he became... And I think this about these three. The very specific characters they are. They were miners. They were from industrial working-class Scotland. They were... still are fanatical about football in that part of Scotland, always breaking world record crowds. So they were brought up in that. And also, if you were a miner, you had to join a union. You know, you believed in socialism. Bill Shankly often said it, you know, I'm a football socialist. And they could argue a point brilliantly. You know, they had to, because if you're a miner, you've got to be able to stand up for yourself and you've got to be able to inspire other men because you're working in dangerous conditions. Now, they are all the central tenets to me of great management and great football management. So they all had that core base. Now, as you said, you're quite right. Different personalities and ways of applying that management. Busby was much quieter and, you know, almost like a kindly uncle with his pipe. Shankly was this great sort of James Cagney character. I mean, literally kicked the doors open of the office when he arrived and sort of said, you know, with this trilby on going, I'm here now, boys, you know, things are going to change. And then Steeno was a great philosopher, you know, just loved the game. Steen was doing stuff like going to the World Cup in 1953 in Switzerland, you know, and stuff like that. You know, this is as a young man. So they all had very different personalities, but they were all rooted, I think, in a very specific way of living, which was industrial Scotland, especially if you work in the mines.
So about, just to touch on Shankly a bit more, I've been fortunate enough to go to Glenbuck a couple of times now.
Yeah.
And it's slightly, well, not slightly, I get quite melancholy about it, to be honest, because you see what this former minor town was, or you read about it, and you see what it is now, and it's literally just a plinth on a roadside, and you're like,
I know.
It's just how much the world's changed. I know we were talking about the current situation in the world, and
yeah,
you know, I'm looking forward to seeing this film, just kind of to see through that prism, because I'm talking about my dad's generation, and he eulogizes so much about Shankly. I mean, not so much about Man United and Busby, but he's Celtic as well, and you know, just to see what it was, because it's one thing standing there looking at a thing on the side of the road, but actually being as much in the pictures as you can be.
Yeah, no, I that's the thing. I think I went to Glenbuck as well, and the melancholy is the right word. It's really interesting when you're there. You just think, well, there was a pit villager that's gone now. There was a whole way of living, and people lived lives, and, you know, there was this community that's gone because time has changed. You know, we've seen it in South Wales. You know, the pits have all gone. There's no miners left in South Wales, which is extraordinary when you think there were 250,000 in 1920, and now there's none. And those things, I think, just need to be documented, and that's what the point of the film was. And, you know, I was saying the other day, I was talking to somebody yesterday about it, and they were going, yeah, I never thought of that before. But the personalities of the men, because they were Scottish miners and they were socialists and, you know, they were union men, they left something in those football clubs. When Liverpool fans walked out of the Kop over ticket prices, or for argument's sake, Manchester United fans wear those green and gold scarves, and Celtic have the banners saying, I don't know, refugees welcome, they are only them clubs that do that. There are no Aston Villa fans wouldn't walk out. I don't know why that is. Arsenal, I don't know. There's something in those clubs' DNA and their support that is of the men, you know, Scouse, not think, English.
Do you think it's an identity thing where, and you probably get this with Cardiff as well, in so much as the people take the piss out of Liverpool fans because they, you know, oh, do you think they're the center of the universe and this means more and all that?
Yeah,
and I get all that. I get all that. But with every joke, there's a degree of truth. There's a grain of truth in that, in so much as, I mean, I was involved in the setting up of the Spirit of Shankly, and I was a young lad at the time. But you do get a sense that people talk about football as a community asset. And whether it's right or wrong, you do get the sense that for some people, it is a sense of themselves and their identity. And by not taking these stands, they're almost betraying themselves and not some business that's not some multi-million pound business that's registered in fucking Delaware or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
They're betraying their own principles and sensibilities.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. It's. I mean, just the banner, Scouse, not English, in itself is a massive statement in the game of football, and it winds fans of other clubs up. But it's a true statement, and like you say, never a word said in jest. Really interesting to me that Manchester United fans don't watch England away. My mates who are Manx, for argument's sake, they're like, don't watch England, why? But Man United. And that's really interesting to me. You know, Celtic have got to touch that as well. There's something about once you become a fan of these clubs, that's it. That's you, the identity wrapped up in those football clubs. And the point of the film is there are very, you know, good reasons for this. Industrial cities in the north, you know, Scotland, dock cities, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But the men that created those dynasties were of that same ilk, and they've left that in the club. Like I say, it runs through the club's DNA that Bill Shankly is Liverpool. It's interesting to me that on every banner in the Kop, he's the father one. He's the, you know, the manager above, slightly above Paisley and Benitez, and now you've got Klopp. Because everything really for modern day Liverpool roots back to Bill Shankly and what he created.
So, and you talk, and I know he features briefly Alex Ferguson.
Yeah.
And he would, I think it's fair to say, the last great Scottish manager of that ilk to do well in England.
I agree.
And I suppose I'll ask you a question. It's only just occurred to me now. You look at where Man United are at the minute and the problems they're having. Do you think they've tried to, and there's a reason I'm asking this, come away from that identity and almost be too smart and too clever and too modern? Because I ask you this specifically because you look at what Liverpool have done for all the science and their leading edge tech that they've employed from Boston and whatever. The man they've got in charge now couldn't be more similar to Shankly. Whereas United just ever seem to push away in a different direction.
Totally agree. Again, you know, it's really interesting. When he took that job, there wasn't a single person who doesn't know football when that's the perfect fit. You just knew, didn't you? Because the relationship he'd had in Dortmund, you just going, well, he's going to do what Shankly did. Paddy Barclay gave me a great line. He said, what Shankly did was, when he went into the crowd and he said, it's me and you together, there's nowhere for the players to hide, which I thought was a great line. He said, you can't hide in Liverpool. You can't be a player like in other clubs and hide because the manager and the club have this relationship. And the club, the fans will back the manager. It's very rare for Liverpool fans to ever go at a manager. I think Hodgson was such a strange time because it was odd to see Liverpool fans getting on a manager's back. Now, I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but in Anfield especially. And Manchester United have got a touch of that as well. When my mate from Manchester was telling, when Mourinho was there and Liverpool fans sang Park the Bus, it really hurt them. It hurt them to their core because that wasn't Manchester United, and that's not Matt Busby. You play with wingers, you play, you know, you play attacking football, you play expansive football, and that's in their DNA again. And once that happens, something goes wrong in a football club. And I think that's what's happened with Man United. And also, it's my point about the film, how important managers are. The manager is probably the most important person in a football club. That's just a fact, you know. I do some work now with Nottingham Forest, and I see it, you know. And I think to myself, well, if you look at Manchester United, there's a club that won the title with Ferguson, and I've been nowhere near it since. That's how important the manager is. And then on the other hand, Liverpool have brought Klopp in, and you've won the title for the first time. I do think at a football club, the most important person is always the manager.
Well, it's the Shankly famous quote, isn't the Holy Trinity? You know, director just there to sign the checks and that. funny enough, you mentioned United, and we will wrap this up now because I know your time is, you're really busy. The Hodgson thing's interesting because not once did anyone call for Hodgson out in the crowd.
No.
It was very, no. What did happen? And it's funny enough, it was 10 years to the day when the first time I heard it last week, we got to Bolton and beat them 1-0 away. It was singing for Kenny Dalglish.
Yeah, yeah.
So they wouldn't directly go, right, you out, but whatever. Yeah. It was just that Dalglish over and over again.
Yeah.
Like, this is the message. Get it, you know, get it sorted.
I think that's really interesting. I mean, I've got a clip of it in the film because obviously I showed the Shankly banner in the Cop. And Manchester United fans, when they sing the song 20 times, they don't sing playing football the Ferguson way or the United way, they say the Busby way. And I know, and it's the same up in Celtic. You see there's banners there for Steen and things like that. And that's really interesting to me, you know, the fact that, you know, a club, you don't see other football clubs with giant banners of their old managers. Maybe a little bit with Ipswich and Forest and things like that, but nothing like Liverpool, Manchester United and Celtic. You know, the fans are very aware that the three men were the fathers of the football club in many respects. And like I said, I just think it's a great story and one I wanted to tell.
How did you enjoy putting it together? Because I know your producer is quite the Liverpool fan.
Yeah, James is a big Liverpool fan. I had to rein him in sometimes. I was a bit like, mate, we've got to put a bit more United in there. And he used to laugh. No, he's a great lad. He's a Liverpool fanatic. I know he went to Kiev together. He's a top fella. He's a great filmmaker. And took us a long time. When we first said we were going to do it, it was nearly 2.5 years ago. And we thought we'd do it in a year. But it was so much material. You'll see it yourself. It's like hundreds of hours of material that I go through and all old stuff, which was great. You know, it was a pleasure to do it, but it was such a big job. And his overriding line to me was all the way through it, he was going, you need to make a film that an 18-year-old can watch anywhere in the world. They don't have to be a Liverpool fan or a Manchester United fan. I want an 18-year-old to watch this film and go, wow. And that's what we tried to do. You know, it's a film that, you know, other people in other clubs will go watch, hopefully, and go, oh, I get it now. When they say it means more, this is where it all comes from. Do you know what I mean?
Fantastic. Right, so we'll wrap this up. Just before we go, though, you mentioned the release date. Obviously, it's been COVID affected now. Amazon, you say mid-month, and then in time for Christmas on DVD. Is that right?
DVD in time for Christmas. It'll be in supermarkets, and I think it's Amazon sort of... I don't know. Obviously, I should know this, and I just think it might be the new year, but it'll be out on DVD for Christmas, so if you need to get one for you, it'll make a nice present, I'd say.
Get us the info over, and we will get it out there. Johnny Owen, thanks for joining me. That's the Three Kings, Stein, Busby and Shankly, the makers of modern football. Paul, thank you so much for joining us. Take it easy.
Welcome. Thanks, Andy. It's been a pleasure, mate.
And it is John Gibbons for the weekend. I'm delighted to be joined over Zoom by James Yeoman, who's going to talk to us about a charity cycling project. So, James, welcome to the Anfield Wrap.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit more about this charity then, sort of why it's been set up and what are your aims, what you're trying to do?
Yeah, so Cycling Projects is the charity I work for. It's a national... UK kind of wide charity, but it's always had strong roots in the Northwest, in particular the sort of Liverpool area. And the charity, on a kind of broad sense, promotes inclusive community engagement through cycling. And in the Merseyside region, we already have a few kind of existing programs. We have one called Pedal Away, which is for anyone really who wants to get out on a bike. We have Wheels for All, which is for adults and children with differing needs, kind of disabilities or learning needs. They need adapted bikes, and we provide those for them so they can get out and ride. And we have a scheme called Bike and Boots in Knowsley, whereby we give people who've been unemployed for a while but who found work, we can help buy them a bike so they can get to work. So that's kind of where we are at the minute. But what we're kind of launching now is a new scheme called Wheels into Employment.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit more about that, because I know that was something you were keen to focus on today. So if you could tell us a bit more about Wheels into Employment, that'd be great.
Yeah, so this is a new project that's been sponsored by the European Social Fund. And what it is, we're offering kind of long-term unemployed people or people who find difficulty finding work for whatever reason, a chance to basically come and work alongside us, work with us for a few weeks, to gain a bit of experience in the voluntary sector, in the charity sector, and with kind of hands-on sort of bike stuff. So it's split into two parts. People can come for the first bit, which is about 4 weeks, and we'll do some kind of basic stuff on volunteering and what that can do, how that can help you. We'll do a bit of kind of events planning and some kind of specific cycling stuff, including getting to grips with some of those schemes I mentioned earlier. So they'll have a chance to see and use those adapted bikes. They'll have a chance to kind of lead some kind of practice rides out as well. So it's a good mix of things.
What is it about what sort of cycling that you think, you know, sort of benefits people really? Because a lot of people, you know, have taken this time, haven't they, to sort of buy a bike or dust off the old one and things like that. And it is, you know... It is helping people, isn't it? Sort of getting out there and obviously people sort of, you know, trying to be outdoors a little bit more now, but what is it about rock cycling, do you think, that's good for sort of body and mind?
Yeah, it's been incredible, hasn't it? Like, it was, you know, alongside like toilet paper and pasta, it was bikes were the first things that kind of flew out the shelves. I myself was looking for one of them, they're called turbo trainers, where you can ride your bike at home. Like if you want to watch the telly or something, but couldn't get one for like 6 months. Anyway, I mean, it ties in at this moment, I think, because it is kind of inherently outdoors. So yeah. People, you know, it's a really good reason to get outdoors. If you don't like running, or running's too high impact because it is, you know, it's put a great strain on your body. Cycling is just something that really anyone can do and gives a real opportunity to get out. I also think the cycling is kind of, it ties really well with this idea of a community. I think cyclists see themselves as part of a community. And when you see someone else kind of trundling along, whether they've only just kind of picked up a new bike for the first time, or they're kind of Lycra clad Strava warriors going out, like there is a kind of a sense that you know, there are other people doing things that you're doing, which again, at the minute, when people are spending so much time alone or with a very select few people, I think it's quite nice to kind of cycle down the road and see other people, doing the same thing as you.
Liverpool itself as well is transforming itself currently into a more cycle-friendly city. So people who are living here or who maybe visited will have seen kind of more cycle lanes going in. And I know that's an ongoing thing. And, you know, more of the roads are being transformed. Do you think that will help in terms of, you know, making us more likely to get on a bike, you know, if we're going into town or whatever in the city, you know, having it, you know, feeling a little bit kind of safer and having it feeling like more of an option will encourage more of us to get on two wheels instead of four?
Yeah, I certainly hope so. I think this is a really important juncture, like for lots of places in the UK, but particularly Liverpool, which I felt for a city that's kind of, it's pretty flat, doesn't have the kind of big cycling culture of some places that I've, some other places I've lived, such as like Sheffield and Manchester. There doesn't seem to be quite as much, but I think that is changing. And as you say, there's good infrastructure going up. I rode down the Dock Road the other day on the relatively new sort of special lane there.
Yeah.
And I think that's brilliant. And that's really the kind of things that will encourage people to go, because you're actually separated from traffic, rather than kind of shoved, you know, alongside, you don't know if someone's going to open their door in you. So there's infrastructure like that will help. But also I know that like Mersey Travel, the trains are really good at kind of trying to integrate, you know, cycling in with your train ride. And I think, yeah, and you know, I think there is going to be a big push, and we will see that, you know, over the next few months in the city, hopefully we'll see lots of people getting out and about. And that goes for, you know, standard sort of two-wheelers, but hopefully, you know, we'll see people being able to use, you know, special machines if they need them, some of the adapted things that we can offer. Our local councillor has a hand cycle because she can't use her legs to cycle, so she goes around like that. And again, that really makes me happy when I see people, you know, finding ways to get out on a bike.
So back on to Wheels Into Employment specifically then. I know it's a new project that you guys are running, but has it had success sort of in other places already?
Well, we're the first ones to do it. So I can let you know.
Pioneers.
You know, this is an exclusive we've got here.
Lucky us.
Yeah, I can let you know in May.
come back on, yeah, we'll give you the success stories. But that's exciting though, isn't it, being first?
Yeah. It's really exciting. I mean, I'm actually quite new to the organization itself. I only started working in the summer. So it's been, you know, starting up this new project at the same time as kind of taking on stuff. It's been really, really interesting. And I am, you know, I'm pretty sure that what we've put together, you know, is going to be engaging for people. And, you know, we don't want to put too hard a line on what we're going to count as success. You know, we're not like measuring, you know, how many people join, get a job, although that would be fantastic. You know, if people, you know, have this experience and they go on to do some more volunteering with us or with someone else, or if they just have a good kind of time that gives them a bit more self-confidence and so on, you know, we're not being, you know, really hard about it. It's just an opportunity we think that people will benefit from.
So if people are listening and they want to get involved, they feel like, you know, it's something that could help them, or they've got a family member or a friend who they think that'd be really good for them, what should they do?
Well, you can, if you're in the Knowsley area, or in fact anywhere, you can email me, which is jim.yeoman, Y-E-O-M-A-N, at cycling.org.uk. And either I can help you, or I can pass that on to my colleagues in the Wirral. Or also, if people know, and it might be controversial on this show, but it's also running in Greater Manchester. So if anyone knows...
Oh, loads of monks listen to this, mate. You know,
religiously. If you know anyone who might be interested in it in Greater Manchester, you can get in touch with me and I'll pass that on.
Great. We'll put that all in the blurb as well. But if anyone is unsure, just drop me a line on social and I can help you and put you in the right direction. James, best of luck with it all, mate. And thanks a lot for coming on.
Okay, nice one to everyone there. And back to talking about the game against Leicester on Sunday, 7:15 p.m. at Anfield. A record on the line for Liverpool. And Amelia, I said before about sort of the bookies, some of their odds suggest, you know, not sure Liverpool can win the league, but they're not that unsure either. Like, we haven't dropped off a cliff. Similarly, they're still making us favourites for this game, which I think sort of backs up everything we've all said there, in that whatever team we put out, you know, you can over-concentrate almost on, shit, you know, Jamie Vardy, or shit, Harvey Barnes, or whoever you want. Equally, they will not want to be playing against Jota. They will not want to be playing against Sadio Mane, Firmino, whoever steps in can give Leicester City a game on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. If you glass half full it and you look at the players that we have got on the pitch, you're going, fucking hell, they're brilliant, aren't they? Like, they're absolutely incredible. And not just kind of on reputation, like, Diogo Jota has had the best start to a Liverpool career imaginable, has been absolutely brilliant, and Sadio Mane is as brilliant as can be expected this season. Bobby Firmino has scored a goal while he's been playing for his country, hasn't he? So that'll probably make him all happy and want to score goals for us. And yeah, not that I'm inclined to do it a lot of the time, but you, because I am nervous, I genuinely am nervous, like, for all the talk of, we'll be brilliant, all our players will still be better than their best players on the pitch. I am really, really scared, because it's the biggest challenge that we've got coming up in the next kind of run of games. And it just feels like it's a really big win if we win. It feels like we can kind of just breathe out a little bit, wait for some of them who haven't got as long-term injuries that could come back, and kind of just go, right, that's the biggest challenge. Just get a fucking shit win in the Champions League and then stop worrying about that for the rest of it. Play a team of whoever, a team of bums for the rest of the Champions League in the group, and then you can move on. I am very nervous about it, but I think you just have to keep looking at the players that we have got on the pitch and how they've played so far this season, when a lot of stuff has felt quite topsy-turvy with different, like with COVID tests and with other little injuries earlier. And you just have to think it will probably be fine. And also, the bookies didn't have us down as favourites last year until we were practically lifting the trophy. So the fuck do they know?
I like it. Adam, in terms of recent form then, obviously the Reds drew 1-1 with Manchester City, beat Atalanta 5-0, beat West Ham 2-1, beat Midtjylland 2-0. And beat Sheffield United 2-1. Leicester City, they beat Wolves 1-0, Braga 4-0. They won 4-1 at Leeds, which was a very impressive result. They beat AEK Athens 2-1, and they beat Arsenal 1-0. They've been getting a lot of plaudits, Leicester. But as I say, we are slight favourites to win this one. They've also not got a great record against Liverpool in more recent times. They sort of feel like they used to be a bit of a bogey team for Liverpool, but they are no more. And Brendan Rodgers still hasn't managed to win against Liverpool either. So we're unbeaten in our last 9 at Anfield against Leicester in the Premier League. 1-7, lost 2. And in fact, Leicester have won just 2 of the last 16 games against Liverpool. Drawn 3, lost 11. So, I mean, I don't know how much you want to read into stuff like that, because obviously, you know, you can do the whole, well, it's different teams, different managers, different times and all that kind of thing. I always think it plays a little bit of a part that they think, shit, we always do shit here.
Yeah, and the other thing, well, so for me, I think it always does feel like a big game these days. Looking back on the last 2 seasons, specifically the ones at Anfield, I thought us beating them with the last minute pen was maybe our second biggest home result of the season after the Man United one. It was massive and very, emotions were running high, and they'd played quite well. I thought we were brilliant, actually, but they'd played well enough to for them to think they deserve the point. And we get a last minute pen and Milner puts it away and there's fighting after the final whistle on the pitch. It was one of the really strong moments and memories of the season for me. And the season before, Maguire scores and we don't manage to get the win. And it's, you know, maybe one of the key results that mean we don't lift the title. So I think that when Amelia talks about being worried about it, I'm worried about it. And I think it's partly because of that I feel like this is a big fixture. And I feel like it would have been, you know, this season sort of not, regardless of where they are in the league and how they're playing. And I actually, so I did watch them against Leeds, and I think that has got me, you know, apart from the historical and emotional context that I've just mentioned, the actual practical side of things, watching them against Leeds, I thought, well, if they start like this, we might have one of the type of game that I don't like us having on our hands. And Leeds Anfield is actually one of them where the opposition can have come to race into a two-goal lead in the first 10 minutes. And I do think that is one tactic that's useful against Liverpool. If I was setting up against Liverpool, that's probably what I would try and do. You know, so I think that it's going to be... there's going to be fireworks, I think, and I think we will try and start fast too, because that's a good thing to do if you've got strength all over the pitch, especially up front, but maybe not in defence. You try and do the same and get a few goals on the score card before the opposition knows what's happening. So, yeah, my general buoyancy, as I mentioned earlier on, is a bit tempered by the fact that I do think this is a really tricky one. It's a tricky time to play Leicester as well. I think Leicester will be good until Christmas again, and then less good after Christmas. So the other thing is that Man City are playing Tottenham the day before, and I think sometimes when we play after City, and I know Tottenham are sort of in the equation as well, in a sense, but when we play after City, I think sometimes we are impacted a little bit by what they've done. Sometimes more so when they've lost. I think when they've lost, I think they lost the day before we drew 1-1 with Leicester that time that I've just mentioned. So I think us playing where we are in the weekend is all adding to it. So I think my message is just like an anxious noise. You can want to sum up what I've just said. You can sum it up in a word. Sum it up in a noise.
Kev, you're not going to make anxious noises, are you? I mean, we've got to be realistic, though, haven't we? I think what Adam's saying is that Leicester are a good side, and I think we all know that. They've had some injury worries themselves, but unfortunately for us, most of them seem to be clearing up now, which is a bit shit. So, you know, there's a problem with Schmeichel, but then he's played midweek, so this head injury issue that he potentially had seems to have gone now. Fofana's back in training, Pereira and Didi, they've all been seen on the training pitch. Don't quite know where they're all at in terms of, you know, can they actually play at the weekend and that kind of thing. But I think it's worth, you know, reiterating what you said before, mate, that, you know, we can get carried away about our injury problems, but the way things are and the way things are going to be, it's going to be like this all season, and it's going to be like this for everyone. And you know, there's a little bit of this going on already at Leicester as well. You know, that they will be patching up a few lads there for the weekend.
Yeah, but as I said before, it's going to be exactly the same for every team. Unfortunately, as you said, for us, it looks like they've got most of their injured lads back, so the international break's probably worked in their favour a little bit. But when you think about Leicester, obviously, you've got Jamie Vardy, your main man, he's the one everyone thinks, fucking hell. But you've got a strong midfield as well. And I think, I like Brendan Rodgers, I know loads of people hate him, but I think his relationship with Liverpool fans is mad, in my opinion, because he was just too young for the job when he got it. But one of the biggest issues I think Rodgers has is he tries to be too clever sometimes. And I think this game could potentially provide him with a perfect opportunity to go, I'm so much smarter than everyone else, here's what I'm going to do. And I think sometimes that's when he sort of falls back a little bit. He wants to be known as this tactical genius. I think he had a little go with the press through the week, didn't he, after he beat Leeds, saying, oh, just because I'm only a British manager, I won't get the credit that I deserve. And I just thought, just shut the fuck up. You've only beat a promoted team. They're playing okay, but they're falling off a cliff at the moment, Leeds. So it still feels to me sometimes like Rodgers is sort of pitching for his own job. I've said that a lot of times, but when he was at Liverpool, it felt like that was what he was doing. And this is an opportunity for him here, where if he plays with a straight bat, he'd probably get a result. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if he tried to do something a little bit out of left field. And then Leicester fans are going, what the fuck have you done that for? Just look at the players we've got and look at the players they've got out. Just play that game. So that might be me just being a little bit hopeful. But even if it's not, if they come and try and do what Adam's suggesting, which is probably the best way to play against Liverpool, isn't it, really? Go at us early, see if you can get the breaks. And if you can get a couple of goals, bang, you're right in the money, aren't you? But I just don't see Liverpool, as I said before, I don't see Liverpool playing a mega high line like we're used to seeing, with it being such a patched up defensive unit. So the chances of them getting breakaway goals very early, I'd be very surprised if it's that type of game where that's allowed to happen for them. Because the only way that really would work is if Liverpool went, well, fuck this, we're just going to go hell for leather and we're going to try and score early as well. And if that's the case, I'd back Liverpool to score more than I'd back Leicester to score. And if you sort of put that out over 90 minutes, I'd say, even if it is a bit of a high-scoring game, I'd back our, especially if we've got Thiago in there, our midfield, to be able to combat what they're offering. Because I think Henderson, as I know Paul Joyce has now said that, hasn't he? So in my mind, I think Henderson was playing. But regardless of who we've got in there, I'm confident our midfield can deal with this. And once you start feeding it to whatever front three we choose, I'm confident we can score more than they can. So even if it is a crazy game of end-to-end, I'd back Liverpool to win that game. But by the same token, I think I'd back us to win a more controlled game where we say, okay, well, normally what we do is we come at you, but what we're going to do today is we're just going to sit down and see what happens for the first 20 minutes and see if we can figure out what you're trying to do and then go from there. Because we're forced into changing our system, whereas Brendan Rodgers has got the choice to change his, and hopefully that'll play into our hands.
Okay, Amelia, well, it's going to fall to you to start us off on this one. It's a bit mad, I know. I mean, look, we said in the first bit that there's a huge list of unknowns, and we'll hope to find out more in Jürgen's press conference. But equally, I think Kev touched on it before. He doesn't have to fucking tell us anything. He can just completely blag the world and just say, everyone's out, mate, and then they're all sound. But have a go for us, Amelia, picking what you think could be the team against Leicester on Sunday.
So this feels like when you go, at least it's not raining, and then it immediately pisses down all over you. But Alisson, there'll be Milner and Robertson and Matip, and then is it Williams has got a bad foot, hasn't he? He's had a kick in the foot.
Williams is hip.
It's hard to keep up. So Nat Phillips then. It was one or the other on my little list, but Nat Phillips then, he's all right, isn't he? He's okay.
He's sound,
we didn't say his name on all the names. Wijnaldum, Curtis, Naby Keita.
He's available.
And then Sadio, Bobby, Diogo.
Okay. Adam,
and that feels okay.
Loads of good players there. You can win football games. Adam, any disagreements?
I had Matip and Fabinho in at centre half. I don't know. Is that? I think Amelia had Nat Phillips. Mm. I'm saying Fabinho is playing. I'm getting Neco Williams. I think he's probably fine. I got kicked in the foot and Andy Robertson. I said, I don't know about the midfield. I think Gini and Keita definitely, and I put Milner in there rather than Curtis. I don't know. I'm not sure about that one. And then Mane, Bobby, Jota.
Are we not having a name?
So add, Kev, go ahead.
What's happening with Thiago?
No one knows is all we can say about Thiago in that.
He's done this before, though, didn't he? He did it for another game this season where he just... Which one was it? It was it might have been the Pep press conference. No, it was the one where Jürgen was in a really terrible mood, which is hard to narrow down. But he ruled out a lot of players and then just wouldn't even say anything about Thiago, and then he played. So he might just, it might be that they're not telling us anything to be like, there's a little boost for you.
I think he's going to get a boost. I think Thiago in there. Sorry, go on.
For those of a certain vintage, I was going to say that. Sorry, we're not going to talk. I'm going to say I'm getting Lippmann and vibes off Thiago. He plays twice and he's absolutely brilliant. Then you don't see him till April for some reason. Then he's brilliant again.
Fuck you, Adam. I'm not listening to any sort of negative Thiago chat. I want that edited out. I don't even want that put out to the public. No one wants to hear negative Thiago chat. Thiago in for me, I think, with obviously you've got Wijnaldum in the middle there, and I'd start Milner. But my only issue with that is having Milner off the bench is just such a bonus for any position that goes down. You fucking hell, I'd put him in goal if Alisson went off injured. He's that good of a sub, but we might have to just sort of, as we've said, it's a bit patch up and get out there, whoever's fit. And I think we might have to get used to the fact that although he is a fantastic sub because he is so versatile, he's also still a fantastic footballer. And if you want to control their midfield, which I think is the key to the game, as I say, they've got a really strong midfield. I just think him and Wijnaldum alongside Thiago and their midfielders are looking going, fucking hell, I know we're good, but wow, we're not them, are we? And before you know it, you can sort of win a sort of mental battle there. And if we are saying we need to maybe outscore them, if you've got that back, the two centre-halves, if you've got Fabinho and Matip, I think we're all worried about who's out at the moment. But when you see the team sheet on Sunday, and if that is the back, the two centre-halves, you'll go, fucking Sam, you know, wait, I'll take that. And if Nico Williams can start, you think, well, all right, well, there you go. We're only one defender down. And he's literally the backup option anyway from what centre be. So I think before you know it, you can go from talking yourself out of a victory and into how much of a hard game is it to thinking, Leicester are fucking shit and we're boss here. So we're going to absolutely tonk them. So I'm going for that.
Is right. And one last thing before we go, Amelia, I've not seen it mentioned much in this context. So yes, everyone has mentioned that Liverpool have moved to the new training ground and we've seen all lovely pictures of it. But what I've been thinking is, the lads are obviously prepping there this week and they've moved in and they're playing there and all the rest of it. Like, do you not think that like takes away from some of the feel bad and turns it into feel good? Like, so if you were going to a new workplace and it was lovely and it was boss, you know, it would create a good vibe that week, wouldn't it?
Yeah, they'll all be made up because they'll have like a new little place to hang their things. And there might be like new things on the menu in the canteen. And it'll be like when you move house and you feel like a new person for a little bit. And then you're just like, oh, this is nice. And it, like, you know, there'll probably be like new toilets and things. I don't know. It would be what I'm saying is, yes, it will give them a boost. And now I'm wishing that I had a new training facility that I could go to so that I had that same little boost.
But you're getting a new house soon. So, you know what I mean? You're getting something on the horizon. Don't worry about it.
They're leaving the dining table, Robbo.
Oh, get in. What more could you ask for? Adam, okay, give us a predicted result. This is how we'll finish up. Give us a result. So Adam first, go on.
I think we'll win 2-1.
Get in. And Kev?
Yeah, go ahead. I'll have a 2-1. I think that's a realistic scoreline. We're bossing it.
And Amelia. Oh, what happened there? Did I go or did you go? And Amelia was what I said.
I was going to go really shithouse, but I'll go slightly less shithouse and say 2.
Okay, we're all predicting a win. I'm going for that as well. I'm backing our makeshift defence to keep out the triangle-headed Brexit fella who scores loads of goals. And I reckon we'll be all right. So I'm going to say 2-0 to the Reds. That has been the weekend. Thanks to everyone on the panel. Thanks to everyone who was on as a guest. Get up for it. Watch the Reds. Keep your heads up. Keep happy. Fuck stress off. Up the Reds. Sports Social Podcast Network.